From Amherst Pierpont Securities and APS Portfolio Strategy, this is Macro Picture. I'm Steve Abrahams.
Steve-o.
Zavala.
How are you, baby?
Good, baby. How are you?
I am Okie McDokie.
That's Zav Negroni. He co-heads the repo desk at Amherst Pierpont and is a longtime student of the money markets. We'll come back to Zav in a few minutes. Most bond investors know a little about the money markets. It's not a flashy group. But if the bond market were a house, the money markets would be the electricity. Without it, nothing works. Wall Street broker-dealers, for example, they borrow from the money markets to finance inventory. No inventory, no market. In the tri-party repo market over the last few years, for example, the money markets have invested, they've financed just under $2.5 trillion a day. Lately, the money markets have been seeing some strange stuff. It has to do with interest rates across different parts of the money markets. At first glance, some of the rates just don't make sense. They're too low. It reflects a flood of cash. And another tidal wave of cash could hit the money markets before June, possibly pushing money market rates below zero and affecting other parts of fixed income. Today, we'll try to explain some of the moving parts creating the strange stuff in the money markets. Today's episode, Follow the Money. Part 1, the Fed and banks. The Fed has been buying treasury debt, mortgage-backed securities, and other securities since last March. So far, more than $2.8 trillion. And it keeps adding $120 billion of treasury debt and MBS each month. When it buys debt, it puts cash into the financial system, and the cash usually ends up as bank deposits. In fact, since the beginning of last March, bank deposits have jumped, coincidentally, by $2.8 trillion. So there's the flood of money. Now, let's talk about what that money does to rates. When a bank deposits excess reserves at the Fed pays interest on those excess reserves, or IOER. Lately, the rate is 10 basis points a year. In theory, if banks could earn more by making a repo loan, for example, against treasury debt, money would pour out of the banking system and into the repo market. The flood of money would lower the treasury repo rate. Maybe the cost to borrow and finance a treasury position would drop down to IOER. But since financing a treasury is a little riskier than depositing money at the Fed, treasury repo should settle a little bit above IOER. On the other hand, if repo rates ever did drop below IOER, money would pour out of repo and back to the Fed to earn the higher IOER rate, and repo rates would rise. Simple, right? Well, it's not happening. Repo rates have dropped below IOER way too often in the last month, and some think repo rates could go negative. What's happening? Well, that brings us to something happening at the U.S. Treasury. Part 2, the changing tide of Treasury cash balances. The Treasury always holds some amount of cash to pay for government programs, and in the last year, it has held huge balances to pay for COVID-19 relief. Let's go back to Zav.
And so, since about almost a year, the cash balance at the Treasury general account has been about $1.5 trillion to $1.7 trillion. It has always been odd that it is that high, because every quarter, through their refunding guidelines, they have affirmed that their target balance is $800 billion, yet they would come in and miss that dramatically. And when Biden took office and Yellen took the seat, it didn't necessarily appear like the spending plan was going to be any different, meaning Biden was going to issue a lot of stimulus and he was going to need to fund it.
But Zav explains that something different did happen.
Seem to happen is there was a new interpretation much cash Treasury can actually hold. Some feel that it has to be acutely defined, and that number is 5 days' worth of expenditures, which is about $400 billion. Some feel it's more discretionary, whatever, but the consensus in the market is that there was a change in Treasury sentiment in the interpretation of how much cash, which meant they were predisposed to bring that down.
In fact, on February 1, the Treasury announced that it wanted to bring its cash balances down from nearly $1.6 trillion today to $500 billion by the end of June. Remember, the Treasury builds up those cash balances mainly by borrowing. It issues Treasury bills and promises to repay the money later. So the easiest way to cut those cash balances is by repaying the money to Treasury bill investors and not issuing more. Simple. The Treasury's cash balances drop, but that money still has to go somewhere. So the Treasury bill investors could try to buy more Treasury bills, but the Treasury is cutting bill supply, remember, and investor demand would just push down bill rates further. Some of it could go into bank deposits, and that means banks would have to invest it. Banks could invest in more bills or in other parts of the Treasury market or in mortgage repo or in put the money at the Fed in interest on excess reserves. Of course, some of it could go into money market mutual funds, and then the funds would have to invest it in more bills or in repo. Back to Zov.
And so the only reason I stress this is because there are two schools of thought at this point. There are many people that feel the more money comes out of TGA into the market, the more downward pressure there is on the money markets. And there are several people like myself who feel it's less about the size and more about the speed with which all of this happens.
Mm-hmm.
And it does appear that in the context of speed, some of this might happen too fast for the money markets and for the banking system to be able to absorb it without any kind of impact.
So, on top of the flood of money created by the Fed, the Treasury could pay back more than $1 trillion in bills by the end of June, unleashing another tidal wave of cash into the system. Then, there's something else happening, and that brings us to Part 3, Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac's cash. The GSEs have been getting an average of $170 billion in cash a month for the last year. It comes largely from principal interest and prepayments on mortgage-backed securities. And the GSEs invested. They invested for 7 days in the money markets, roughly, before passing it along to MBS investors. In December, their regulator, the Federal Housing Finance Agency, proposed a new set of rules. Those rules would encourage the GSEs to invest in short Treasury debt and Treasury repo, not in MBS repo. The rules aren't final, but the GSEs already seem to be investing as if they were. I asked Zov about that. Okay, one other item I want to ask about. Separately, you have the GSEs now looking at new rules for liquidity that give them incentives to take cash out of MBS repo and put it in Treasury repo.
Yep.
Big deal, small deal.
So, I stammer a little bit. I would say that any time the market gets too complacent, relying on, a short-term buyer, it's a good thing when that short-term buyer gets pushed to the side, right? So said differently, I think it's a little crazy that the GSEs would come in and people would prepare for them to come in by levering up so they could make cheap sales, or I should say rich sales, i.e. sales at low rates. I think what confused everybody is the FHFA rule, it wasn't hidden. I think people knew it was out there. The comment period ends in March, and the effectiveness of the rule is Q3. So why did Fannie and Freddie choose the month of February to stop buying mortgage repo?
Zhang came back later and said it was actually January when the GSEs changed their game.
That's the part I think that's confused a lot of people. And so that's the part that I would say is new news and did hurt the market a little bit.
Okay. So you have the Fed pouring money into the system through QE, the Treasury thinking about adding $1 trillion through June, and the GSEs investing heavy prepayments and switching from MBS repo to Treasury repo, possibly opening a gap between those two repo rates. But wait, there's more. That brings us to part four, the bank supplemental leverage ratio. Generally, banks with more than $250 billion in assets have to keep at least 5% in Tier 1 capital, no matter how risky the assets. This is the supplemental leverage ratio, or SLR. Last spring, the Fed said banks could drop Treasury debt and excess reserves from the asset part of the calculation. That would relieve the pressure when QE flooded bank balance sheets with cash. They could buy treasuries and deposit reserves at the Fed, no problem, at least when it came to calculating SLR. But at the end of this March, this temporary rule expires. If the Fed does not extend the rule, banks will either have to raise more equity or do something to kick money off their balance sheets, most likely into money market mutual funds. The cash would still slosh around the system, but money market mutual funds can invest it in a much smaller, much more restricted set of assets than banks, mainly treasury bills and repo, some bank CDs. The pressure on those rates to go negative would be great. Zhang again.
So I think that's a fair point. I think where I get stuck in a conversation, right, is if I take the macros at face value, right, so Fed is adding $220 billion a month. By the way, Treasury's decided to let their general account fall. Both of those are increases in reserves. It means that between now and the summer, reserves go up $1.5 trillion, $2 trillion. And it means between this summer and next summer, they go up another $1.5 trillion, $2 trillion. And I don't know exactly when, but I know it's probably 2021, a bunch of banks run out of room. They literally run out of room because $4 trillion on the top 20 banks is, I don't know, 15% of their assets, something like that. And so the only thing you could do, right, is either pay down a liability or retire another asset. So without upsetting bank, the composition of bank balance sheets, and ultimately the cost of leverage, there's no way to do that without making a modification for supplemental leverage. But I'm really stumped that this, they're not going to grant the temporary exception on supplemental leverage calculations. And why they're waiting this long, I'm equally stumped on. So I definitely have heard, you know, that there are some people that are planning on it not happening. And that might be okay for March. It actually might be okay for March. If the asset purchase program and the TGA go the general direction that the market expects them to, I don't know how the banks are going to absorb all these assets without having to delever, and they're going to delever in ways that are going to be a little painful for a whole bunch of market participants.
That brings us to part five, the fix or fixes. My friend on the repo desk, again, has a few ideas.
The first, we've already talked about. Extend the the exemption of treasuries and reserves from the supplemental leverage calculation, thereby giving time for banks to either right-size their balance sheet or if they ultimately care to raise liabilities or capital. The second is the Fed has been really clear about wanting to keep these administered rates in the background, about not making a whole thing of them.
By administered rates, he's talking about IOER and another rate, the reverse repo rate, that the Fed uses to soak up money from the GSEs, money market funds, and primary dealers. IOER is now at 10 basis points a year, the reverse repo rate at zero.
But it would probably help the money markets if they got a little clearer with exactly what they want. Because 2010 to 2015, the administered rates were zero, was 5 basis points for the reverse repo facility and 25 for the interest on excess reserves. Yet there was so much drama that played out in 2016 and 2017 and 2018 that the Fed, for whatever reason, didn't, when they cut rates, didn't set the administered rates where I just naturally thought they would. They set them down where they are now at 10 and 0, which predisposed and meant that rates would be downwardly pressured and downwardly biased. And so increasing IOER to, say, 20 and the Fed reverse repo to 5 would allow the money markets to have a lot more room to operate, and these bill phenomenons would be less disruptive because the Fed can drain trillions through the Fed reverse repo facility, which is currently at zero, and a tweak to 5 would make sense. So the second point I would say is get these administered rates in a position where people are truly going to understand them and make them effective by letting the money markets have some room to operate, because right now the money markets don't.
So, a couple of thoughts. First, Fed QE is very unlikely to end by June. So that's a continuing source of cash on bank balance sheets and in the markets where banks invest, including money markets, treasuries, and agency MBS. Second, if the Treasury really decides to cut cash balances and not issue any more Treasury bills, that unleashes another tsunami of cash that also likely lands on bank balance sheets. Money markets, Treasury, and MBS markets, among others, should feel the impact. If Treasury does not unleash the cash or unleashes it slowly, it's business as usual. Third, focusing on the GSEs, they should continue to depress Treasury repo rates between the 18th and 24th business day of each month when the GSEs warehouse cash, and drive a gap between Treasury and MBS repo rates. Finally, if the Fed allows the current SLR calculation to expire at the end of March, banks would likely start to do things to discourage deposits, such as charging negative rates. JP Morgan, Citibank, they've already talked about needing to discourage deposits, and that would divert investment out of the assets that banks like to hold and into assets that money market mutual funds like to hold. If the Fed extends the rule, again, business as usual. The big problem could come if the Treasury unleashes the tsunami and the Fed allows the SLR calculation to expire. Pressure on short rates to go negative would be intense. In fact, rates all along the yield curve and spreads in risk assets would feel the impact. Rates drifting a bit lower, spreads tightening. One thing the Fed could do to brace the system is raise IOER and especially raise the Fed reverse repo rate. As Zov points out, that would allow the Fed to soak up a lot of cash and make it harder for repo and other rates to drop below zero. Stay tuned. The action in the money markets says it's going to be another exciting spring. Thanks to our ace producer, John Killian. And that, for now, is the macro picture.